Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah. That plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Oh my God. They're only doing sex in the city again.
Merry Christmas, my motherfucking brother.
Merry Christmas, Guy Montgomery. I got you the gift of episode 4 for and just like that.
Tim, the timing couldn't be better. I like nothing more than on the 25th of December unwrapping a spanking hot new high-definition video of three of my best friends wandering around the town of my fourth best friend, New York City. And can I say this? You didn't fail to deliver. There was an episode. It was in my stocking. I took it out. I held it up under the light. I could see it was authentic, and I watched it. I watched it with my eyes, and I heard it with my ears, and I experienced it with my heart. And I'm so grateful to have a friend to talk about it with.
Because
if they didn't release them, you know, I wouldn't watch them. And if I didn't have someone to talk about them with, I don't know what I'd do with this feeling inside. How are you?
I'm good, Guy. Merry Christmas to you. I suspect you're going to be on the wavelength here. There's kind of a big fucking ticket item that hopefully you know what I'm talking about, which was in the episode. I don't want to lead with it, but I'm very excited about it. I'm excited to talk about it. I am excited about the ramifications of what it means that it was in the episode. But before we get to that, let's cover the sort of more neutral, calm ground. I would love to get a little bit of colour and context. It is literally Christmas Day in New Zealand. A stonker here in Tamaki Makaurau, where I am in Auckland City. Where are you? Wow. When did you watch it? How did you watch it? Run me through.
I'm in a little known place called Lake Hayes. It's a little lake in the South Island between Queenstown and Arrowtown. And it is sweltering.
It's so hot.
It's so hot
today. I'm in a closed-in studio. I'm going to sweat my dick off by the time we're done today.
Yeah. I can't wait for Tim to be podcasting like a fucking Ken doll on the back end of this episode.
Oh, takes me Tim, back.
I feel like this entire country is sizzling like a sausage on a barbecue because a lot of people will say they're against global warming, but every now and then there'll be a Christmas day that can turn around an entire summer. I have had a wonderful day. I am at my parents' house with my younger sister Annie, and we celebrated Christmas by going for a gorgeous walk. I believe in America, beautiful, on the West Coast, some would call it a hike. It was about an hour and a half. It was 7.5 Ks with a lot of uphill, and it was gorgeous, simply gorgeous. I've been in fine fettle all day. My spirits are high. I received this hat I'm wearing.
Great hat.
You can see.
It's quite, oh, it says Duff on it, like the bear from The Simpsons. The picture I'm getting right now is quite pixelated, I get the idea of the hat, and I love it.
It's a corduroy hat that says, can't get enough of that wonderful Duff.
Who got you there, Guy?
That was my sisters. They know me. They know me down to the ground.
Go, sisters but Montgomery,
no,
go.
No Christmas day would be complete without waking up at 7:30 a.m. and thinking to myself, I don't know what the day has in store, but I do know at 5 o'clock NZT, I'm going to be talking turkey with Tim.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Why not do my homework first things first so I can have a relaxing and relaxed day in the sun? So, what did I do? I rolled over, opened my laptop, logged into a streaming platform that stocks, and just like that, here in New Zealand, and I just unfurled this episode straight into my eyes, hadn't had a coffee, which was actually a fascinating subplot in the episode. I just got things started, and then I went through my day looking forward to this. I couldn't concentrate on the walk. I couldn't concentrate on my family. I couldn't concentrate on the gifts, giving or receiving. All I could think about was, what will Tim make of this visual feast? And here we are. Now, before I ask you about your Christmas, there is something, just to set the table for our listeners in this episode, I want to talk about. The episode is called Some of My Best Friends. Episode 4 of And Just Like That, Some of My Best Friends. And some of my best friends are Tim Beck. but in this episode, all of the three remaining gals, Carrie, Charlotte, and Miranda, go on a fascinating journey and unique journey to having one friend of color in their lives.
Yes.
And it is, I'm just going to put that out there like a tantalizing piece of listener bait before I ask you, Tim. First Christmas as a father. I don't know if you've been hosting, but I know you're in your home. I know you've got some family in Auckland.
Strange sequence of events that you've laid out at the start of this episode. Christmas, gorgeous, lovely stuff. Baby's good. We've been in lockdown, so this is among the first couple of times that my parents have gotten to meet wee Remy, so it's been very, very nice. My uncle was lovely enough to host us and put on a fantastic spread. All your proteins, all your veggies, all cooked to perfection.
Wow.
Fantastic stuff.
It's a lot of protein and vegetables. All of them?
Yes, every single one. Can you imagine it? Then it was on the table.
It's too much food.
If you can dream
it. Must have been a pretty long table.
It was a long Christmas. But, I mean, my God. So, you've already mentioned a couple of big ticket items. Number one, one of the early themes. Look, when you're writing literature, you're writing for the screen, for the cinema, for the stage, novelizations, what have you, you've got to have themes. And one of the themes of this episode is we're in New York, baby, and we drink coffee.
Yeah, it is unmissable. It is unmistakable. It is yet another breadcrumb on the trail that Mattress Pikelet has left for Timsel and Geitel as they navigate their way to Carrie Bradshaw's gingerbread house.
She is now. Who's the witch? Is Carrie the witch, or is Mattress Pikelet the witch?
I think they're in cahoots. But I mean, this whole episode starts with a bunch of people who are pretty much saying, "Hey, don't frickin' talk to me till I had my morning coffee.
I gotta have my coffee."
It is crazy.
There's so many mentions of coffee. I don't know why they decided that. Especially like, have it in the whole show. But just to introduce it into this, it was like they freaked out and they were like, oh man, we've got some awkward conversations about race relations coming up soon. So let's start them off easy. Let's talk Java.
Well, you know what I say, Tim. I always say first coffee and then adulting. That's what I always say. And, like, it's crazy, isn't it? Because everyone's drinking coffee. Mm. They're talking coffee. You're seeing coffee. You can almost smell the coffee through the screen. Mm. But we're sitting at home and we're thinking to ourselves, where the fuck is New York City's most famous coffee drinker?
And lo and behold, let's not bury the lead any longer. Coffee guy is fucking back. And he's not just back. He is new and improved. He is dapper as hell. He's got a three-piece suit. He's wearing a beautiful tie. And this time, his coffee is a little too hot for him. So he's got to keep blowing on it. And we see him do it a bunch. And he's reading a newspaper. And he refuses to use the saucer. And I was so fucking elated to see him. I thought I was going to scream. So he brought me... So this scene happens at 30 minutes and 15 seconds duration into this episode, if you want to bookmark it and have a look at what we're talking about, the scene started playing out. I don't even know who the fuck is talking. Is this with Miranda having a coffee with someone? Charlotte.
Wait, I'm going to have to. Dude, I have to pause you.
Yeah.
I didn't see him.
I love it.
I didn't see the guy. I thought, here's what I thought. There's so much coffee at the start of this episode. They're setting up the episode, sure, but mostly they're ordering, they're making, they're drinking coffee. Miranda, famously anti-pot Miranda, who's just had this crazy experience at one of the worst comedy gigs of her life, is stoned to the bone in her kitchen, just staring down her coffee machine while it slowly drip feeds, you know, coffee into the pot. And Brady and his girlfriend come in and they give her shit for being a stoner. And I fucking love it. But the episode keeps going. And then Carrie, who's at her old place, gets out her old Mocha Master and starts trying to make a coffee.
And
doesn't remember how.
The few nods to the old school as well. She's wearing, I believe, the iconic dress from the original intro, right? From the TV show where she gets sprayed with the bus. Or it's at least like a heavy nod to it.
It's an homage, yes.
And she goes back to, I'm assuming, a quite iconic bodega that is at her old apartment, which I'm guessing plays a big role in the TV series.
That's right. But I'm sorry, while I talk to you, I'm also just lining up. I need to catch up to you in terms of knowing exactly where our guys
are. Yeah.
But the thing is, before she goes to the bodega, she goes because she's in her old apartment, she's in her outfit, and she's lining up a coffee, and she puts her Mocha Master in. And this thing's fucking, it's like a babbling brook. It's bubbling, it's troubling, it's spewing forth ground down beans and boiling water all over her countertop. And I couldn't help but think to myself, is the spirit of Coffee Guy not trapped in this machine? That's what I thought. And I watched the episode being like the ghost of Coffee Guy. He might not be visible,
sure,
but he's present. And then here I am, ready to talk to you, and you tell me that 30 minutes and 15 seconds into the famous episode, Some of My Best Friends, our hero makes return. So set the table, Tim. I'm going to catch up in real time. I've got the timestamp.
Literally,
I'm at the cafe.
I could tell you everything Coffee Guy is wearing. Can't even remember who's talking, who the main character is in the conversation.
I'll tell you who's in conversation. It's Charlotte, and it's terrible, actually. I don't know her name. But it's her friend, her very powerful and beautiful black friend, who she is absolutely in fear of sort of alienating she's basically, Charlotte lives in fear of anyone knowing what she's actually like. And currently this friend is top of the pops. She's at the very top of the list of people she doesn't want to see her as she is. And they're out at a coffee shop and they're in conversation. And Tim, you continue to tell me what happens as I actually watch what happens.
Well, I think I've listed all the main stuff, but we have got a upgraded version of Coffee Guy, who is like if the Coffee Guy that we know from Sex and the City 2 has stumbled into not just quite a lot of money, but a whole lot of style. He is elegant, dressed to the nines, and situated center of frame during this conversation, to the point where when this happened on screen, Zoe yelled out at me because the baby was doing something really cute that she wanted me to see, and fair play to her, Remy was being adorable. But I said to her, well, I've got news too. Coffee Guy is back, and I'm pretty sure this is a direct attack at Guy and I. Like, it is inescapable, the distinct possibility that Mattress Parklet King has listened to the podcast, knows what we're up to, and is throwing these things in for us.
Okay. There are too many breadcrumbs at this point for it to be just a coincidence. I've watched it. And basically, in terms of development of age and perhaps fortune, everything checks out.
Yes.
This guy, Silver Fox, slicked back hair, three-piece suit, business paper in front of him, coffee in hand.
Yeah.
He's calling over the same waitress twice for reasons that we don't know. Presumably, the coffee's not hot enough.
Well, hold on. Before you go any further into like developing these questions, I mean, it sort of is. It's begging for a little something, a little but up, 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 Merry Christmas, seebity poop, 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 poop,
poop, poop, poop, poop,
poop, poop, poop, poop, poop,
poop, poop, poop, poop, poop,
poop, poop, poop, poop, poop, poop,
poop, poop, poop,
poop, poop, poop, poop,
poop, poop, poop, poop, poop, poop, poop, poop, poop, poop, poop. Mm. You got to assume he's feeling good.
Oh, yeah.
The one complaint he has is this thing isn't scalding hot. Hey, madam, I can still feel my tongue. Fix it!
Madam.
He's up to his eyeballs in the stock market.
Yeah.
He's probably, honestly, I've been to a cafe to work. And it doesn't matter what your deadline is. It doesn't matter how hard you're trying to concentrate. If there are two people having a deeply personal or like what seems to be an intimate or an opening up of emotion and conversation, mm-hmm. you know, you can't concentrate because you just, it's like, you know, we've got these internally calibrated radio stations which are tuned to internal monologue or what's happening just over there. And, you know, you've got to assume he's trying to work through it. But he can't put his coffee cup down.
Yeah.
I just watched him. The guy literally cannot separate his fingers from the stem or what's it, the handle of the mug. Mm. It's not a stem.
I think he's blowing on it as a sort of cover because he's trying to tune in on what they're talking about. And it is Charlotte, right, in that scene? There's a few.
There's Charlotte.
A lot of conversations in this episode. It's hard to keep track. I've literally just watched it.
Yeah. By the way, conversation. Mm. Yeah, that's currently the fifth friend.
Yes, that's correct. Charlotte is so like most of this episode. Honestly, most of this episode is Charlotte grappling with the fact that she doesn't have a diverse enough friend group, and she freaks out when she is she initially gonna, she's gonna host the dinner, or she's just going to someone's
basic, yeah,
she's hosting one, I think, her friend who she's on the like school board alongside, and they get along famously, she gets invited, Charlotte invites her around for dinner and then has to put on like a big show of it because that's what high society people do. They don't have enough problems, so they have to invent problems. And these problems for high society people are, I must impress my other anxious, rich friends who also don't have real problems with an amazing dinner. And if I fail at this task, my life's over.
It sounds trivial to recount it, but you've got to appreciate these problems are as real as any of the problems anyone else in the world faces, because this is literally all they know. They cannot fathom a life in which they have to worry about anything more than having exactly the right balance of friends and exactly the right dinner party. Or this school friend, this friend of a child who attends school alongside Charlotte's kids, may remain just that.
Mm-hmm.
She might not penetrate the second tier of friendship, which is a friend. And as Charlotte sort of, the friend flippantly says, oh, we've got to hang out outside of this context. I'm actually free in 2 nights. What about Thursday? And Charlotte says, Thursday's great. And then we watch her scramble.
And the scrambling is so weird because the spanner in the works to the Thursday night dinner is that she's just booked Runkelin for a colonoscopy on Friday morning.
Runkle's getting a pretty tidy run in this season.
He is.
And they're not wasting their chance.
I wrote down a note for Runkle, and that is, in this episode, Runkle really displays himself as a man who has learnt the value of shutting the hell up. Just head down, doing what he's told, keeping everyone happy.
Oh,
he does his homework.
Yeah, he's like, and you'd have to. I mean, I don't want to, no one knows what goes on inside of another person's relationship. Like, you could look at your friends you think are the happiest in the world, and you just don't, you know, like, you know what you see, but no one knows the intimate details. But you've got to imagine, to maintain this happy, you know, and seemingly functional marriage with Charlotte, that Runkle has become an absolute master and grinning and bearing it. Because Charlotte, there are points in this episode where I'm like, Charlotte is going to drive everyone in her life away from her. She is such, like, she's so obsessed with how she's perceived.
Yeah.
She's so controlling about the image she broadcasts. It looks like one of the least relaxing ways to live your life. Imaginable. It's exhausting to be in proximity to, even from behind the fourth wall. And Runkle just fucking ponies up and takes it. And he actually had what has to be the greatest moment, not just of this episode, but of the season so far. So on their way to this dinner party, it turns out Charlotte can't host the dinner party. The friend can't make it on that night for whatever reason. But as a counter, she says, why don't you come to my husband's birthday? We'll have a great time. And Charlotte says, yeah, okay. And she's aware that she's going to a black person's dinner party. And so, you know, that, of course, means she has to educate herself. And
yeah, it's taken until now of spending an entire adult lifetime living in New York City, working in the art scene, for her to go, oh, fuck, African-Americans exist. God damn it, I forgot. Yeah. So she has to cram. Like some sort of physics student that missed all the readings and has a test the next day has to catch up on like 50 years of black history and current literature.
I will say this, you know, that is a lifelong blind spot, but to her credit, she fucking ponies up and does her work. And she even dispatches Runkle a couple of articles to just cast an eye over to make sure he's good to go.
She gives him the Cliff Notes version of like, okay, this magazine article references all the authors you can name drop, so just read this and you'll be okay.
And he does. And they're riding in the elevator up, and she's like, did you read the article? And he's like, yeah. She's like, okay, name three. It's so good. It's like he's wearing a band t-shirt which says, I read black literature. Yeah. She's like, oh, yeah, you read black literature? Name three black authors. And he says, Sadie Smith. And Charlotte says, no, it's Zadie Smith. And he goes, okay. Anyway, so we just have that in the back of our mind. They go into this dinner party.
Oh, well, hold on, because he sets it up in the lift. So he's like, oh,
he does.
Can't I just say I read Michelle Obama's book?
And I have so much time for Runkle's approach to life, which is like, can't I just live my life as myself and face whatever the consequences of that may be? Like, oh, honestly, the truth shall set you free. And the refusal to engage with that idiom is what traps Charlotte in this fucking self-made prison of self-flagellation, which is not dissimilar to the situation we're in on Christmas Day. You know.
Je suis Charlotte.
Yes. So they're at the dinner party, and there's not a white guest to be seen. Charlotte and Runkle represent the entirety of the white community, and they're nervous. And Charlotte, you know, there's an irony that Charlotte sees or believes in, which is, you know, here she was worrying that there'd be no, you know, other diverse guests at her dinner party, and yet she represents diversity at the dinner party she's gone to. And they're sitting around, they're shooting the breeze.
Well, I'm sorry to keep it. I really do apologize for interjecting, but I know you watched this morning.
I think it's important to get the details
right. It's just, this was a moment that gave me, I mean, if I bought a little bit more into the show, and they're doing a not bad job in this episode with a few aspects of getting buy-in from the old Timbo, but she opens by walking in and bowling up to a random woman and being like, hey, Gwen, yeah. I haven't seen you in ages since your son, you know, was at school with my daughter. And she's like, that isn't me, but I know who you're talking about. And it just goes back to Charlotte to like show her face. I was like, if we have to stay in this moment, because I did feel that a little bit. I've got what I would describe as like moderate facial blindness. I've been in situations that are sort of walking up to this point in my life where I've mistaken.
I've done it in my life.
Yeah, I've mistaken people for other people and like opened up a conversational vein, but I know to not trust my memory enough to keep things pretty vague at the outset, have a big wide funnel until I can figure out like with confidence that I'm talking to the person I think I am. So she bowls in with a strong offer. It's a swing and a miss, and it's one of those ones that just breaks your heart to see.
It's a classic mistake, and it's a trap that this show and this season continues to set for our heroes, which is, well, when it comes to, you know, the modern matters of race and sexuality and gender, these girls can be clumsy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's nothing more humanizing than that.
Yeah, that's true.
Aside from watching them be clumsy. and multi-million dollar environments.
We're walking down the path to get to your favourite moment with Runkle.
Yes. And so she has this moment, and then they're all sitting around the dinner table. And actually, again, Tim, you might need to – I mean, I assume you know what I'm talking about, but you might need to help me set it up, which is basically the conversation's all flowing, and Runkle is not relaxed. It is said at some point after the dinner that it was observed he sweated through his suit. And to be fair, that's because Charlotte put him so heavily under the pump. He did not have permission to be himself. Mm-hmm. But basically, at one point, there's a moment of familial tension between Charlotte's friend and her domineering mother-in-law, who we've met in a previous episode.
Who was referenced earlier as being the reason the original dinner couldn't happen, because she last minute threw it on her daughter-in-law that she was going to take her to the opera. So this is this cloud is sort of looming in the episode, this mother-in-law of Charlotte's friend.
And Tim, I've just written down the line, and I've written down Runkle with perfect comedy delivery, but I cannot remember precisely the opportunity the show serves him to deliver.
The lead up is, okay, well, it's kind of long, actually, so I'll try and keep this as short as possible. But basically, the mother-in-law says, cottons onto the fact that Charlotte is somewhat interested or knowledgeable about art. We know, sort of, from the TV show, and by we I mean Guy and myself, that Charlotte York used to run an art gallery in New York City.
Well, I mean, so it's referenced in the movie, but we do not regard the TV show as canon. So
yeah,
it's,
that's true.
You know, we don't know for a fact.
Apparently.
It's been said.
It's been referenced.
It's not been seen.
It's been referenced in what we know to be the key texts, which are Sex and the City, the movie, and Sex and the City 2, the movie. So she says, oh, my favorite art is Art Smith. This is the mother-in-law talking. And that's a bit of a joke, because Art Smith is the financial advisor for the family. And and she goes on to say, my daughter-in-law has spent more on these prints that you see around the wall than my husband and I spent on our first home in North Carolina. And then Charlotte says, well, I cannot speak to the property prices in the Carolinas, but, and then proceeds to go around individually naming all of the fantastic photographers that have taken these amazing shots, their storied careers, referencing that it is a fantastic investment that her daughter-in-law has made.
She pretty much delivers a bibliography on the art hanging off the walls.
The final piece of which is a photo that has been taken by the person who took the first, I think, White House portrait of Michelle Obama.
Painted.
Oh, sorry.
It's a photo. Yeah. Painted the first portrait of Michelle Obama. And that's actually not the line, but at that point, there's a painting of the portrait of Michelle Obama, and Runkle goes, I loved her book! And you feel like elation that he finally gets to experience life in his own skin at the table. But my favorite line was, I think it's before Charlotte sort of parries back and saves her friend's ass. It's when the mother-in-law sets up some incredible tension, and Runkle, just trying to cut through this moment, goes, anyone read the new Zadie Smith book?
Oh, sorry. Yes, right.
It's perfect. He's so out of his element. But he's just like following the script he's been given to a T. Yeah. And like, you just know if anyone says yes and, you know,
he's
returns
fucked.
Conversational service, he's absolutely fucked. But he doesn't care. Like, he's just a good guy.
Yeah.
But God Almighty, like, it's just a joy to see him being given a bit to do, because he is, and it sounds badly that we're watching in just like that and favoring, you know, these ancillary male characters. But if you spent as much time with these gals as we did, you would understand this is not gender.
I think at this point, there's enough, like, even by osmosis, just absorbing random headlines of, like, you know, Atlantic articles and think pieces written by Vox. You know that there's a bad woman and it's okay to know that.
I've not engaged with any, like, I cannot wait until we finish the season to see what people who are a lot smarter than us thought about the whole thing.
Yeah, same.
But all I could think this whole episode was, like, how in the, not just, like, well, I mean, first of all, like, how did they ever think that a television show built around these sorts of, you know, conversations and moments could ever, you know, be parlayed into a movie? But then, you know, more than that, how did they make those two movies last 5 fucking hours? Because It is all, I mean, and you know, like in the hands of brilliant creators, any tiny moment can be extrapolated into, you know, like you could watch a movie which is just one moment in two people's lives, and if it was told correctly, or you know, or effectively, or movingly.
The Sunset series with Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke. Like, that's kind of a conversational. It's and one, there's more than one of those movies, I think. There's at least two, maybe three.
Yeah, before Sunrise the First, there's two people who meet incidentally and just have this incredible connection. They wander the streets and they're just talking, getting to know each other. And it's truly like, it's a beautiful piece of filmmaking. And this is just like, I mean, they've had so many bites of the apple here. You know, it's very American that if there's still money to be made out of a franchise, we do not need to be precious about people's relationship to it or where it stands in the cultural pantheon. Because I can see, you know, $400 million inside of Carrie Bradshaw. And so it doesn't matter how painful it will be for everyone involved, but I'm going to get it out of
her. The picture that you're painting for me is it's like we have to smash a piggy bank, which is your heart, to get all the money out.
That is what it feels like. Like, I could not have empathized more with Kim Cattrall when watching this episode than being like, it's episode 4. It's an 8-episode season, I think. I'm so fucking tired of following a grieving Carrie Bradshaw around, like, this gilded version of New York. Mm. I could give a fuck. I could care less. And Carrie's got her own burgeoning friendship with a person of color to enjoy in this episode.
Kim Cattrall, and not Samantha the character, but Kim Cattrall the actor, is, for my money, the actual hero of And Just Like That. Because to have the foresight of knowing just how diabolical this was going to be and get offered what I imagine would be a not insignificant amount of money. And, you know, Kim Cattrall has cemented herself. She is like the Sean Connery of Sex and the City. She's cemented herself so much in this role that really you can't, you know, if she pops up as something else, oh, Samantha from Sex and the City is being this person. And yet she still had the solid enough head on her shoulders to go, not worth it, not doing it. And she was completely right. Can I throw a completely different thing in the mix here, Guy, if I may?
Wish you would.
What the fuck is going on with Peloton? Because it gets mentioned a lot to the point where I would have put money on the fact that it was a product placement, except I'm proliferally aware that I think there might be some legal action brewing because the first episode, Big dies on a Peloton, and their share price went down, like, by quite a bit. And they were very angry about this. And
how quickly the world moves, because they then released an ad.
I think Ryan Reynolds made that.
Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah. He is the voiceover artist for it. If you notice, he does the narration. And Ryan Reynolds has got like a telecommunications company now called Mint Mobile. He's got his own gin brand called Aviation. And the dude is actually kind of like an entrepreneurial marketer who's just really good looking and good at acting. So I think that I don't know this, but I think that Ryan Reynolds like got on the phone to a bunch of people because he's got enough A-list power to just get it done. And got Chris Noth, got the ad, got it produced, got it up, did the voicing, got it to air. Of course, what we now know is that like fucking 36 hours later, those horrific stories started coming out about Chris Noth from The Younger Woman. So the whole thing has just been an absolute car crash of a situation.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is because, from Peloton's perspective, it's like, you fucked us.
Yep.
And then Ryan Reynolds comes along and is like, okay, we can make something out of this.
It's all right. I've got an idea. We'll put Chris Noth in the air and bring him back and heavily and associate like, him in a positive way with your brand.
And then you go, you could not have fucked us.
And just
any
like
worse.
That. Ryan Reynolds fucked Peloton.
And then, and just like that, Peloton is taking legal action against the Sex and the City universe, which is so good. Like, you know, this intersection of worlds.
Lots of people say the word Peloton in the episode, and then Carrie, her apartment is being done. So she's decided to sell her and Big's apartment because it's too painful. So,
introduce real tour character Seema, a woman of Carrie's age, who is loudly and proudly single and knows what she wants and does some of the most sensational walking while acting I've seen. She's being shown around Carrie Bradshaw's apartment and every scene it's like watching her rehearse a play.
Oh, it's like the best episode of The West Wing you'll ever see.
It's like they actually need to get live sports camera people in to film Seema scenes because of the pace at which she's moving across the camera and through these rooms.
The greatest camera operators from the NFL to follow this woman. Seema, which, by the way, means boundary in Hindi, which is funny because she doesn't have any. Her words, yeah. Not mine.
But yeah, so Carrie's trying to sell her apartment through Seema because she's just decided she's going to park the whole, you know, my husband died in their experience and move on with her life.
Yeah.
And as you were saying, Tim, Seema is walking around it. Yeah, like, she's like,
you even played the
gorgeous,
Sims?
Gotta go. Yeah.
It's like someone loaded up a saved state of The Sims that someone else worked real hard on and just deleted all of the furniture and trappings and pieces inside the house. So it's just this beige, wall-to-wall beige experience so that potential buyers can come in and put their own vision on the place. But then it's kind of fucking crazy. Walk, like, opens the closet door and the only item that's in there is just a Peloton front and center, which is the thing that killed Big. And I, like, this is after the word Peloton, which is trademarked, as this I understand is, yeah, there it, has been said half a dozen times.
There was a conversation between them when they're walking around and Seema's like, okay, I love what you've done with this room, it's got to go. Love what you've done with this room, got to go. You know, buyers are like dogs. They're fucking idiots. They need to see something empty so they can transpose their life on top of it. Carrie's like, oh, it seems pretty tricky, but okay. And signs off. And they're walking around and they walk into the wardrobe bathroom area, which is famous from Sex and the City 2. And like, you know, the wardrobe and bathroom that is an ensuite to Big and Carrie's bedroom is like, it's the size of basically any normal apartment, maybe larger than any normal apartment in New York City. It is absurd. And Seema says, this is the first place I think I've ever had where I could take a photo of the bathroom and it would sell the apartment. And she's looking and she's looking. Carrie's obviously gotten rid of the Peloton because of all the awful memories it brings back. And Seema says, do you know what would really pull focus in this room? A Peloton. And it's like, no one in their right mind would think, no, like the last thing the room is missing is a fucking exercise bike.
Yeah, it's out of nowhere.
It doesn't look good. It looks like shit and it ruins the room. But Seema, this realtor, is like, you know what this needs? Copyright protected intellectual property.
Yeah.
There.
Exactly. It was like the Suzanne Summers book in the second movie. It's just like, why does Ricky fucking talking about this? How much money
is the relationship?
What is the relationship? It's a hard thing to try and get our head around. But at any rate, so it gets mentioned a bunch and then Carrie's like, I don't know about a Peloton. And then later on, she's on the phone to Miranda walking around her now completely deleted apartment. And she's like, I got to go. There's a fucking Peloton here. I'm going to bounce. And she takes Big, who was cremated, which I thought was interesting, not buried. I guess more people are doing that now. And then bounces and goes back to her apartment. Probably get cremated. What will you do?
I get cremated before or after the service.
That's a good question. Hadn't thought about that one. Might suss out my will now that I've got a kid. I'm thinking about that.
Yeah, I want to go open casket. I want to get roasted by Tim Bat, and then I want my ass to get burned.
Yeah, that's pretty sick. That's a good sequence of events. We can all pay our last respects to your sort of earthly.
I want the walkout music at my funeral to be, I heard somebody say, burn, baby, burn. Disco inferno, burn, baby, burn.
Oh, man, we really do talk about our own death a lot on different podcast projects, don't we?
What does it say about our project?
Don't know. Stanford Blatch is gone, baby, which is sad because he died in real life after this was wrapped.
The episode is dedicated to Willie Garson, who famously played Stanford Blatch across the span of the show, and it is just another example. And in fact, we could dedicate this podcast to Willie Garson because he seems like a fantastic guy.
Yeah.
This one does go out to Willie, but it's just a further example of, and just like that's like, it's crazy.
Well, hold on. Let me tell everyone what happened. So
yes, please.
Carrie stumbles upon a note that I think is in her old apartment that Stanford left for her. And it says, hey, I've gone to Japan. And then she rings Anthony up and she's like, what the fuck's going on? And then he comes over. And Stanford in the show now has just bounced, gone to Japan to manage a TikTok star.
TikTok star.
okay. I didn't even realize he was a talent agent at any point.
And he's asked for a divorce from Anthony.
Yeah.
Who, like, is... I mean, he's a bit of a handful, but I do love every scene we spend with Anthony at his Hot Fellas
He's
bakery.
Awesome, man. Anthony's like, because we got no Steve in this episode. We didn't get a goddamn lick of Steve in this episode.
Yeah.
Very grateful for Brady up top and very grateful for Anthony.
We do keep getting a bit of Runkle, but yeah.
That's true.
Basically, Stanford writes a note that says, hey, you know, introduces like several new things at once. It's like, hey, I've gone to Tokyo to manage this TikTok star.
Also, and TikTok exists in this universe and I'm a talent agent.
Like, this show does not how to address the absence of its actors.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same way they did Samantha Dirty. It's just like, and I understand that they would have been, like, this would have been a shock to everyone involved in the production. It would have been devastating. Like, you know, they lost one of their core players during production. And I don't know how you incorporate that into a season-long story arc, more specifically into an episode where you might have had, you know, things to do which, you know, dictated what would happen. But surely you can do better than just a guy writing a note that says, I'm in Japan, see you never.
Yeah.
Like, it's fucking crazy.
Can I ask you a question, though? As a person uniquely positioned, perhaps the only other person on earth who could have the requisite experience to go with me on this, Carrie reads the letter and then says to Anthony, who does he think he is with this note? The Lost Bronte sister? hasn't that joke been used in one of the movies?
It has. And haven't they got the... You're like, haven't they, as actors, got the knowledge that we have as audience members, which are... There's a reason that Stanford is not in this episode, and that's because his actor has died.
No, like, you're wrong. That's not the case. The whole season had wrapped, and then Willie died. This is coincidence, I'm pretty sure, because he died very recently. He died really recently. I don't think they were still shooting.
It's a great question for the Trainspotters, because it felt so abrupt.
Maybe you're right. I'm just looking at some Hollywood Reporter headlines.
To me, it absolutely reeks of having to incorporate a death of a performer rest of a season.
This is awful.
Yeah, it's an absolute balls up, and to recycle the same Bronte sister joke, and, like, you know, the thing is that when they're recording this and when we're watching it, they know that we know the reason that the character's gone to Japan is because the actor has died.
Yeah,
and so to, like, offhandedly dismiss it as, like, who does he think he is? The Lost Bronte sister? Jeez, I hope no one watched Sex and the City 2 recently. And then be like, he's in Japan.
But also, not only I hope no one's watched the movie recently, I hope no one's a fan of that character or actor who's portrayed him for 25 years.
Yeah.
Because it's so disrespectful.
To offhandedly do that and then have the fucking gall, the temerity to dedicate the entire episode to Willie. I mean, and look, to be fair, I don't want to doubt the love that everyone involved in the production has for Willie Garson you know, he did a great job. But I just think, total fucking balls up.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We've had so much fun discussing this, Tim. We haven't left ourselves much runway to discuss a few things that are important to me that I think should be addressed before we get out of here.
Go on.
Namely, I mean, this ties in pretty neatly with my favorite and least favorite characters for the episode. My favorite this episode, Miranda. It's good to have her back full force. She goes out for a meal with her law professor, Nia Wallace. We know they got off to a rocky start. And she really, really advertises her wares as a friend and a listener. She doesn't put any of her own stuff forward. She just sits there and, like, honestly, it was inspiring. It was a real model, like one of the few models and bastions of friendship that we've seen in the show so far. Nia is talking about her experience with IVF and the fears she's having as a woman who doesn't know necessarily whether she wants to be a mum or to have a child while she's going through all of the rigmarole of, you know, trying to ensure that it happens. And Miranda just sits back. She does some incredible listening. She doesn't offer advice. She's like, she crushes it
on
completely.
Scale of Carrie Bradshaw to George Lazenby, how good is the listening?
She's one peg down from Lazenby.
Amazing.
It's a masterclass. And you cannot see her boner in a single one of the frames. It is honestly incredible. And that actually dovetails in with my least favorite character. And this is petty, but what are you going to do? You can be petty. It's the Miranda and Nia go to this restaurant and they're waiting. There's a scene of them waiting to eat. And as they're standing there in front of the front desk with the maitre d' standing behind it looking at an iPad, they're waiting and two people leave. And Miranda's like, that guy with the straw hat, those people came in after, that guy in the straw hat leaving with the doggy bag, they arrived after us. And I'm watching that and I'm like, this is fucking crazy. Who would arrive at a restaurant and wait for so long that another person's entire dining experience could take place? Like, not just wait for that long, but wait for that long without any information. And that leads me to my least favorite person, which is the maitre d', who is admittedly Nia Wallace. She made the booking, but she made it for the corresponding restaurant in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So that mistake is on her. But the refusal to engage with their issue at all on arrival, and then in the 40 minutes that follow it, while they just patiently stand in front of his table or his, you know, his service station, and be like, what is going on here? Are we going to get to eat? I just thought, that's just, you know, and a lot of these hip eateries, you know, people, and it's you know, I've worked in hospitality, I understand it's their right to feel about the customers however they do, but I just thought it was bad. There was a bad attitude, it was a bad customer service experience, and it's what stayed with me. Didn't like it. Least favorite character in the universe for this episode.
Good on you, guy. I think that speaks volumes about your experience in the hospitality industry and also your commitment to customer service and making sure that everyone's having a good time around you. So
I do love that.
I would say least favorite, because I don't know who that is. Let me figure this out. Probably already named Carrie. I think I did. Or maybe the first one. It's tricky. Oh, okay. Well, fuck it. I'll bestow this honor upon him. That fucking Guy Fieri looking dude whose apartment they're in.
I wrote down Guy Fieri light as well. Do you know it's not his apartment? He's just a very wealthy, recently divorced guy looking for something to buy.
Okay, this guy, pretty cool, but I'll give him worst character award for this episode.
He tries to seduce Carrie at an open home by saying, shall we check out the bedroom?
Yeah.
And he's got a really dark energy.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he definitely deserves worst character award. But, I mean, like, it's just, you know, it's good to have a fun, confident villain in some of this,
I couldn't agree more. And he was on the line for me. He could have easily been favorite character because he's a fucking deplorable guy. But yeah. I'm like, At least he's living honestly.
He's fun. That's what it's about, isn't it? He's true to himself. My favourite character is Herbert. Who's Herbert, I hear you ask? Well, that is the husband of Lisa, who is Charlotte's black friend who is hosting the dinner. And Herbert is just like this. He strikes me as a intensely conciliatory man who can get any group of people together, and whatever beef may be above the surface or bubbling away under the surface, he can just get a group of people to gel and have a good time together. I watched him. I liked what he was doing on screen, and I thought to myself, that guy looks so familiar. Is he in Hamilton? And then I thought to myself, have I just done the same thing that Charlotte did and totally misremembered like who he is and got him confused with someone? And then I looked him up, and I'm happy to report that Herbert, portrayed by Christopher Jackson, is indeed George Washington from the original Broadway run of Lin-Manuel Miranda's Hamilton. So,
shit, yeah.
A fantastic singer and actor in musical theatre and a great character in this show. Herbert, yet, we salute ye.
Yet another breadcrumb in Mattress Pikelet's fucking, you know, breadcrumb trail for the boys. Who is, you know, who are we vaguely affiliated? Who was in Sex in the City too? Lin-Manuel. I've just got, before we go, I've got a few bullet points to get through.
Look, I just want to say this, though. Coffee Guy is in a realm of his own. Obviously, he's my favorite character, but that's a whole other universe.
The evidence is stacking up beyond belief that he knows we're out here.
I know, bro.
And I hope he's watching along. I'd like to say the following things. I really like, there's a classy touch, Todd Rundgren, who big references his favorite musician and is played on their record player in episode one. There is a new instrumental arrangement of the song, It's Important to Me That You Know You're Free. There's an instrumental version of that song playing in the apartment when Carrie first walks through it again in this episode. Also, I don't remember if I said this, but that song is sampled in an Erykah Badu song, and Erykah Badu is playing in Sex in the City when they're having the Osso Buco dinner.
Big cooks like the tomatoes.
It all connects up.
Yeah.
What else have I got here? I've got Carrie wore a hat that rivals her ridiculous Hades Queen of Darkness hat to the big gay wedding at lunch. Mm-hmm. After she sees the murderous Peloton, it was absurd. It's a flat hat. It's not quite a beret. It looks like the biggest bird in the world has taken a massive shit on the middle of her head, and she's just rolled with it. It was a disaster.
Well, while we're rattling things off, and it looks like maybe you've got one or two other points to make, I'll just throw this in. Love that smoking cigs is back. There's no getting around this. Crushing a dart just looks cool on screen. Sorry, everybody. It just does. It's an inescapable truth.
Seema's on the darts and Carrie's on the darts too, and there's nothing not to love about that. Rocco, Seema's driver, appears to be played by Jeremy Strong.
Yes!
A.K.A.
Thank you. Thank
Kendall.
You. Thanks.
From Succession.
Saw it, saw him again, thought it again. So happy to hear you say it.
Uncredited role. either, like, it's hard to say whether or not this is my favorite or least favorite person in the show, but in Mattress Pikelet's sort of desperate diversity casting attempts in this season of Sex and the City, he has cast a social media manager at the podcast that Carrie works in a wheelchair, who just, like, she's got one scene, which is basically fucking putting everyone in front of her on blast.
Yeah.
And
she keeps telling Carrie that her social media is a dead body, a corpse. It is lifeless. And everyone else, Bobby Lee's like, call it with the recently deceased chat.
But it's like, it's a very, very clearly throwaway ancillary character who they've cast the net wide, and either hats off or, you know, nose tip to Mattress Pikelet for, I guess, engaging with the modern world on his terms. Charlotte's off the deep end. I've got
Miranda's still on the sauce, unabated.
Yeah, Miranda's still on the sauce. Do you know what? We pretty much got it all. Seema and Carrie, there's a beautiful moment at the end where Carrie accuses Seema of being insensitive, and I'd say Carrie's pretty out of line. when she does it, and Seema's like, okay, I made a mistake, I'm sorry, but also you are insensitive. And Carrie, we get to see a rare moment of self-reflection from Carrie where it actually connects with her as a person, which was pretty incredible. There was one other thing I wanted to say.
Yeah, we're closing off here, but there's a couple moments, and I think they all involve Seema, where Carrie Bradshaw was put on the back foot. That's where this character should live all the time. It's where she is her most charming, is when she has a quip to disarm a situation that has sort of gotten away from her. Like when she's walking around, Seema is this super confident, very efficient real estate agent who's like, that's got to go, that's got to go, that's got to go. This is pretty heartbreaking stuff for a recent widow that, like, you know, all of this memorabilia of her life has to go with, you know, her recently departed husband. And she just throws these, I can't even remember what she says, but these little, Seema, stop. I have something important to say. Don't touch any of my shoes. And then Seema looks at her and says, I totally get it. I named all my bags. This is Lorraine. And Carrie goes, nice to meet you. And it's just those little moments, which I feel like is TV show Carrie Bradshaw. And I'm like, that's the fucking writer. That's the put on the back foot, like the world's a little bit against her, Carrie.
They've given her no fun to have in this set. Like, it's very difficult. None of the characters appear to be having any fun in this series. There's hope for Miranda because she is discovering
bisexuality.
And possibly bisexuality. And, like, you know, there's an opportunity for that to be an enjoyable plot. But basically, all of these, we're just watching, you know, these. I'm not saying that being widowed is not a genuine problem or alcoholism isn't a genuine problem, but, like, we're watching, like, manufactured problems at the very top of an ivory tower, and it's not what you want as an audience member. The thing I wanted to say, the final thing I had written down, which I just wanted to say, was when Charlotte's rattling off potential dinner guests to round out the group because she's nervously hosting this dinner party.
Random black people she knows from her building.
But before she even gets to random black people, she's like naming just friends who they could have over, and Runkle suggests a couple, and Charlotte's like, they're too vanilla. And I was just like, can you imagine being described as vanilla by Charlotte Goldenblatt? Like, fuck me. You have got to be some white bread, crusts cut off, boring ass motherfucker for Charlotte to be like, that conversation is too bland for my taste.
I know one man who could never be accused of falling into that trap, and that is Coffee Guy. He will be in my mind and in my heart until this next watch, and I hope I get to see him again. But it's been a pleasure spending part of my Christmas day with the gals and with Guy Montgomery. Aren't we some silly, silly boys? I'll just wish everybody happy holidays, whatever you celebrate. Your Kwanzas, your Hanukkahs, your Christmases, your non-denominational celebration, your atheist refusal to engage with the season, your anti-consumerist buy nothing day, whatever you've got, hey, drink up, baby, get that Java down ya.
Yeah, get energized, get anxious, and go and make some big swings on the stock market. We'll see you next time as we watch these women navigate the challenges of life inside the 1%.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.